We deny responsibility for our actions when we attribute their cause to vague, impersonal forces, such as, I cleaned my room because I had to. Or our condition, diagnosis, personal or psychological history. An explanation of this kind would sound like this. I drink because I'm an alcoholic. Or we attribute our behavior to the actions of others, such as, I hit my child because he ran into the street. Or we attribute our behavior to the dictates of authority, saying things like, I lied to the client because the boss told me to. Or we blame group pressure, saying things like, I started smoking because all my friends did. Or we attribute our behavior to institutional policies, rules, and regulations, saying things like, I have to suspend you for this infraction because it's policy of our organization. Or we blame gender roles, social roles, or age roles for our behavior, saying things like, I hate going to work, but I do it because I'm a husband and a father. Or we say our behavior was caused by uncontrollable impulses, saying things like, I was overcome by my urge to eat the candy bar. See, when we do things not out of the pure joy of contributing to life, but when our language tricks us into feeling that we are compelled to do it by outside forces, it doesn't make life very enjoyable. And anything we do out of that kind of energy, everybody pays for it. Another time I was consulting with a school district, and a teacher said to me, I hate giving grades. I don't think they're helpful, and they create a lot of anxiety on the part of students. But I have to give grades. It's district policy. We had just been practicing how to introduce language in the classroom that heightens consciousness of responsibility for one's actions. I suggested that the teacher translate the statement, I have to give grades because it's district policy, to, I choose to give grades because I want, and then I ask her to fill in that blank. What are you wanting that makes you give the grades? She answered without hesitation, I choose to give grades because I want to keep my job. And then she hastened to add, but I don't like saying it that way. It makes me feel so responsible for what I'm doing. I told her, that's why I want you to do it that way. I share the sentiments of French novelist and journalist George Bernanos when he says, I've thought for a long time now that if someday the increasing efficiency for the technique of destruction finally causes our species to disappear from the earth. It will not be cruelty that will be responsible for our extinction, and still less, of course, the indignation that cruelty awakens and the reprisals and vengeance that it brings upon itself. But the docility, the lack of responsibility of the modern person, their subservient acceptance of every common decree. The horrors that we've seen, and the still greater horrors we shall presently see, are not signs that rebels, insubordinate, untamable people are increasing in number throughout the world, but rather that there is a constant increase in the number of obedient, docile people. Now, there are some other forms of communication that I'm also concerned about because of how I see them disconnecting us from life. Communicating our desires as demands is another form of such communication. A demand explicitly or implicitly threatens the other person with blame or punishment if they fail to comply. It's a common form of communication in our culture, unfortunately, especially among those who hold positions of authority. My own children gave me some invaluable lessons about demands. Somehow I'd gotten it into my head that as a parent my job was to make demands. I learned, however, that I could make all the demands in the world. But this still couldn't make the children do what I wanted them to do. This is a humbling lesson in power for those of us who believe that because we're a parent, teacher, or manager, our job is to change other people and make them behave. So here were my children letting me know that I couldn't make them do anything. All I could do was make them wish they had. Then they taught me another lesson, that any time I would make them wish they had, they would make me wish I hadn't made them wish they had. Life-alienating communication is also associated with the concept that certain actions merit reward while others merit punishment. This thinking is expressed by the word deserve, as he deserves to be punished for what he did. It assumes badness on the part of people who behave in certain ways and calls for punishment to make them repent and change their behavior. I believe it's in everyone's interest that people change, not in order to avoid punishment, but because they see the change as helping them to enrich life. I've just outlined some ways of communicating that I would suggest that we transform: moralistic judgments of others, statements that deny responsibility for our actions, statements that blame our feelings on others. I'd also like to suggest that if we use punishment and reward to motivate other people, I'm concerned about that. I'm confident we wouldn't use punishment and reward as means of influencing people if we ask ourselves two questions. Question one, what would we like the other person to do differently? Now, if we ask only that question, it makes punishment seem like an effective strategy, because we can probably all think of times when we have been influenced to do something out of a threat of punishment, or we have been able to get other people to do things out of a threat of punishment. But if we add to this question, what do we want other people to do differently? We add this question, what do we want their reasons to be for doing what we are requesting that they do? I think it will become obvious to us that punishment is a losing game. Punishment reinforces the idea of violence as a way of getting what we want from other people. When people do things out of a threat of punishment, we become a source of punishment, and the more people associate us in that way, the harder compassionate giving is for them to engage in. Now, that's not easy for people to consider giving up punishment, because they have this idea that unless we have punishment, we'll have social disorder, people will just do whatever they want to do, we'll have chaos, anarchy. They don't realize that there are other ways of keeping social order beside the threat of punishment. But even though they can somehow see that punishment leads to more violence, it's hard for them to see the problem with rewards. It looks to them like rewarding people for doing what we want is a natural way of doing things. But here again, in nonviolent communication, we would like people to do things because of the intrinsic, the basic value of doing it in terms of how it enriches life. We want that to be what motivates people to act as they do, not to get some extrinsic reward from other people. Now, of all of the extrinsic rewards that concern me, one of the ones that I'm most concerned about is the use of praise and compliments to try to get people to continue doing what they are doing that we like that they do. I'll speak of that later on, except that I want at the moment just to include praise and compliments as part of this rewarding people to do what we want. I'm sure people would never use rewards again if they read Alfie Kohn's book, Punished by Rewards, in which he shows all of the problems that are created when we try to get order or get people to do things out of rewards.